What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 75. We're continuing our series on therapeutic aspects of the keto diet. So we're going to talk about how the keto diet can literally reverse diabetes. So we're going to go into how you become diabetic and how low carb can really help you with that. But first, let's do a quick check-in. So Tom, how's your week been?
It's been really good. So I'm just going to basically talk about the run I did. It's the same run I did last week, but actually I went all the way through with it. So for those of you who don't know, I ran Mount Diablo last week. I did about 2/3 of it. This week I did the full thing. It's about a 15-mile trip there and back and about 3,000 feet in elevation up and then down. So start off in the parking lot about 60 degrees or so. But I know the weather's going to be a lot different at the top, so I'm dressing warm. So like the first, I don't know, 3 or 4 miles, it's like cloudy when it starts off, then it gets sunny. So I'm just like drenched in sweat at this point because I got a long sleeve on, I got like a headband on, like sweating as much as I possibly can. Then once I get a little bit higher up, then the fog like really starts packing in. Like I can't see anything once I get past like mile 5.
Yeah.
Like 100 feet in front of me, I'm blind. So I just have to like follow the trail as much as I possibly can.
Were are there any people up there with you?
In the parking lot and like down below. But like once you get past like 3 miles on that trail, there's nobody out there.
Okay.
This is also middle of the day, middle of the week. So not a lot of people are out in general. So last week I stopped at mile 5 because I thought that's where the parking lot should have been or the campground should have been. But actually it was like half mile past that is where the campgrounds start. If it was clear weather, I probably would have been able to see the campgrounds. It would have been good to go. I just didn't know. I thought I got lost last week, so I turned around and went back. So this week, I kept going. I made sure I was on the right track. I took pictures of the map, was like tracking everything. Do you know how creepy it is running through an empty campground, especially in the fog like that?
It sounds creepy.
Oh, it was so creepy. I was getting kind of scared, especially because I'm listening to a scary like podcast, like an audio drama that has to deal with a research team that gets like stuck in the mountains and like they're stuck there because it's foggy and like their rescue helicopter can't come and save them. So like some like extra, I don't know, like some spirits are coming after them. So
for sure. The ghost. It's a ghost story.
Yeah. And it's like all to do with the fog. And what am I surrounded by? Nothing but fog.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, this is going on in my head.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if you ever played Red Dead Redemption or not.
No.
Okay, so it's a video game, like you're in the Wild West, and like sometimes you'll just be out in the woods, that's part of the game, and then all of a sudden you'll just get attacked by like a mountain lion or like a bear or like a pack of wolves or something like that. So now I got this going on in my mind because me and my fiance have been playing that game a lot recently.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, I'm scared that I'm going to get attacked by some spirit in this fog or some mountain lion's going to come and attack me.
For sure.
But I also just watched Creed 2 like the day before. So, you know, like those montage, like workouts of those boxing films, like, you know, everybody just gets pumped up like that.
Yeah.
So I got that going through my head. So I'm like, come on, spirit. Come on, mountain lion. I'm ready. I'm ready to take you on. So I'm like looking up and down, checking everything out to make sure like I'm good for mountain lions. Because I actually am scared of mountain lions.
As you should be.
Yeah. So make it to the campgrounds. Creepy as hell. Keep going. It's another like mile and a half to the top. When I get to the top, I mean, I can't see anything until I'm like right at the like actual observatory. Take a picture from the top. You can't see anything. You can't tell that I'm at the top. So I have to like go find the summit sign to take a picture of that.
Yeah,
it's
I saw
only,
that.
Only proof you have. And then on my way back, I can't see the trail. So I'm like taking the long way around. Just like instead of just going straight across the parking lot to the trailhead, I don't know where it is because I can't see. So I'm like taking the long way around to like just hug the outside, just like stay along the trees until the parking lot finally meets the trail. Don't see it till I'm like 10 feet there. At this point, I've ran through rain, fog, like the densest fog ever. And then when I start getting like past the campgrounds, it starts snowing on me.
Wow, really?
Yeah, like not enough to where it's like staying on the ground, but it's definitely like slushy stuff is hitting me in the head and stuff. Like I think there was some on my beard and everything.
Wow, okay.
So I ran through everything that day. It was such a weird experience, like sunshine, rain, yeah. Fog, snow. The only thing that sucks, like when you get up that high, like it's a lot rockier and all those rocks are like really slippery. So you kind of have to really like make sure you're taking your time and like doing everything kind of careful. But yeah, after...
Yeah, if you roll your ankle up there by yourself, it's going to be a long road back.
Yeah, I'm more worried about, like, not, like, rolling my ankle. I mean, that is a pretty big concern. But more of, like, I'm going to slip and I'm going to, like, hit my leg on and, like, break a bone.
Yeah, that would be worse.
Yeah, break a bone. Because these aren't, like, little gravel rocks. I mean, this is the mountain I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, that's going to have no give. And, like, that's what I was, like, mostly worried about. But then after I get back down, the whole thing was, like, smooth sailing. I pretty much sprinted the whole way down. It was like a 5-mile sprint. Like once I got past the campgrounds, it was like an easy run. Just like it's pretty much like a fire road. Yeah. So it's really easy. It's kind of gravelly, so it's kind of slippery. But I finally invested in some good trail shoes, so I was like, no problem. Once I got back to my car, I was like, you know what? I could do this again. I thought about it. I was like, you know, I'll be here all day, and it'll probably be dark by the time I get back.
Yeah, not so worth it.
Didn't want to do it, but yeah, I was pretty proud of myself. 15 miles, that's a really hard 15 miles, too. I did that.
Yeah, 15 miles up a mountain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely ready for whatever 50K I decide to do next month.
Yeah, for sure. That's cool.
That was, like, my, like, test to make sure I'm there, and wasn't too bad. I did it yesterday. I'm not that sore right now. Once we're done recording this podcast, I'm going to do another... like 10 to 15 miles tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I like to do those like long
runs. Just around the house?
Not around the house.
In your neighborhood. Yeah, I mean. Yeah.
I might even run to the gym, spend an hour on the treadmill, and then run back.
Okay.
I'm thinking about doing that. That would be about like 13 miles.
Okay.
Something like that. I'm not sure.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll figure it out when I get home, see how everything feels.
No, you're definitely in shape, man. You're definitely ready for whatever you decide to do next month. You'll crush it.
Oh, yeah, and one thing, I know I talked about this a couple weeks ago, was that I was, like, trying to do all these runs, like, not only fasted, but, like, with limited water and, like, no salt intake. And, like, for whatever reason, a couple weeks ago, it was really difficult for me. But since then, I did last week's run in the same state, this week's run, no water, no salt beforehand. Felt perfectly fine, no cramps, no issues like that. So my body is, like, a well-burning machine right now. It knows how to recycle everything. I practice a thing that's called, like, train low, race high. So, like, I'm training in, like, a depleted state and all this stuff. But, like, on race day, it's going to be...
Give me everything.
Yeah, all the sugar, all the
salt,
all the amino acids, all the electrolytes, all that stuff.
Yeah. No, that's smart, man. That's how you should do it. Yeah. That's cool, man.
Yeah, so that's it for me right now. What about you?
Yeah. For me, I mean, you know, man, it's the same old, same old. A little insight to our week, we kind of had scheduled to interview another guest of a podcast this week, but the interview kind of fell through, so we're going to do the Keto for Diabetes talk today. And I put the majority of these notes together a while ago, to be honest, so I'm hoping all this stuff is still fresh in my mind, because the problem with doing a weekly podcast, and I think I've actually talked to you about it, and I think the problem is being a simple human, your brain can only hold so much information.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know what I mean? So I put these notes together, and I'm fresh. I'm ready to talk about it. But if it waits a few weeks, I'm going to forget some of these little details. So hopefully all this stuff is still fresh in my head. And it should be, you know. But, yeah, let's just get into it. So obviously we're talking about the ketogenic diet and why it's therapeutic. We've touched on ways to do keto wrong. We've touched on ways to do keto right. We've touched on last week something called the NADH to NAD ratio. And these are all aspects of keto that are beneficial and that people, in my opinion, don't talk about enough. And that's why I wanted to do this whole series. So obviously diabetes is super prevalent in today's society, especially in America. You know, there's a bunch of big old people walking around, you know, and it's sad. It's 100% preventable and it's 100% reversible. And that's part of diabetes that never gets talked about. If you get diagnosed with diabetes today, your doctor will tell you have it forever. You know, that's going to be a chronic thing, and that's not true. If you treat it correctly, it doesn't have to be something you live with your entire life, and it shouldn't. You know, diabetes sucks. You know, it really sucks. People get things cut off, toes, hands, everything. Wounds don't heal. It's very bad. It's a shitty way to die, to be honest. So if you have diabetes, listen up and learn, and you can definitely reverse it, and you can be happy and healthy within, I don't know how much time, 6 months, a year, but whatever. You put in the work, you will not be diabetic anymore. And
yeah, if you want to know a little bit more about like what it's like living with diabetes, we did an interview with Mike. It was, I don't know, it was one of our first ones.
A while ago.
Yeah, over a year ago. It was probably in the teens. But yeah, that just like sharing his experience with it and like how it's like affected his life. It's a really powerful interview. I recommend going back and listening to that if you don't already know anything about diabetes or don't know anybody that it's impacted.
For sure. Yeah. And we're also going to touch on things like tofu. So that's like thin on the outside, fat on the inside, and how you can be fat and healthy, because those are two concepts that are a little confusing to people. You know, you see someone skinny, a lot of people just associate them with being healthy when that's not necessarily true. And when you see someone that's really overweight, you just think they're automatically unhealthy. And again, that's not necessarily true either. You know, there is more nuance to it. So we're going to break that down and what that's about as well. But just to start, diabetes is usually diagnosed when someone's fasting glucose is over 126. And I'm going to quote a lot of studies during this podcast. And again, like always, the studies are going to be on the website, so check them out. But here's a quote. So by and large, the severity of the metabolic disturbance is reflected accurately in the degree of elevation of the fasting blood glucose concentration, which reflects the magnitude of the hepatic overproduction of glucose. So that really means just your liver is producing a shit ton of sugar, and it shouldn't be. And ideally, you want your blood, your fasting blood sugar, to be well below 100. And I think that's, a lot of people don't know that. They think if their fasting blood sugar is 100, they're good. But really, we're talking, if it's in the 70s and 80s, that's ideal.
Yeah, 100 basically just means, like, if you're over 100, you're sick. So, like, just being at 100 doesn't mean you're good. That means you're borderline sick.
Like, get something checked out, you know what I mean? Change your lifestyle, for sure.
Yeah, your goal shouldn't be to be just barely healthy. Your goal should be, like, I want to be optimal. And yeah, 100 is definitely not optimal.
Exactly. So, most people are going to think that the diabetes talk is going to be all about sugar. But in all actuality, it's really going to be about insulin and glucagon, which are the primary two hormones responsible for maintaining healthy blood sugar. And of course, you already know if you listen to this podcast, I get real detailed with shit. And we talk about how almost with anything in our lives, it's about the hormones. That's really what controls who we are as people. And insulin and glucagon are going to be the two big ones we talk about today. Insulin helps bring your blood sugar down, and glucagon helps bring your blood sugar up. And diabetes is a disease of insulin resistance. You're going to hear that term a lot as well. And so your body is no longer listening to the cues that insulin normally signals, which would obviously bring blood sugar down. So the current dogma treats diabetes, honestly, backwards. They give people insulin. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so basically your body's not listening to insulin. So what do doctors do? They, like, yell insulin louder. Like, that's what they're doing. They're giving it more insulin. So, like, hopefully your body will hear it.
Yes.
And then listen. But that's not really what happens.
It's not the good way to do it. I'm definitely going to break down why. But just a touch on insulin resistance. So diabetes is a disease of insulin resistance, and why should you care about insulin resistance? And that's because 70% of all deaths are linked to insulin resistance. It's not just diabetes. Things like cardiovascular disease, cancer, and Alzheimer's all have links to insulin resistance, and it's very linear. It's like 1-to-1. The more insulin resistant you are, the more chance you have cancer. The more insulin resistant you are, the more chances you have to have Alzheimer's. Like, it's serious stuff. Trust me, if you have Alzheimer's, you don't want it. It's, I mean, I guess shit, you won't know, but it sucks. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, all those are preventable, and all those are relatively new.
Yep. So how do you become insulin resistant? And honestly, this is going to be the most simplest thing I say today, but it's simple. It's just too much fat accumulation. That's it. And this, we actually, me and Tom talked about this before this podcast. This podcast is going to paint fat in a very negative light. And I'm relying on you to kind of make sure people get the point.
Okay.
Because it's not, fat's not the problem, even though I'm going to blame fat for the next like 30 minutes. So pretty much you become insulin resistant when you accumulate too much fat. So the bigger a fat cell becomes, the more insulin it takes to shove fat into the cell and keep it locked in that fat cell. So a fat cell can expand about 20 times its original size. After that, it doesn't want to get any bigger. Just think of a water balloon. The bigger you fill it up, the harder it is to fill it up even more. There's a limit to how big it can get. And it's the same thing with our fat cells. And I know you're thinking, but wait, you know skinny diabetics, and you also know obese people without diabetes. And yes, both of those things can happen. And this is where it starts to get a little more nuanced. We're going to talk about a concept called personal fat threshold and how fat cells grow. So fat cells have two ways to grow. You either have hypertrophy or hyperplasia. So most growth occurs via hypertrophy, meaning that one fat cell just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And remember, the bigger the fat cell gets, the more insulin it takes to fill it and keep it from spilling out its contents.
So that's like the water balloon that you just talked about.
Yeah, exactly. So hyperplasia, the other type of growth, is when your fat cells don't get bigger, you just grow new small fat cells.
So you just get a bunch of water balloons instead.
Yes, a bunch of small water balloons. So in this scenario, growth via hyperplasia is fine and healthy. Each one of these small fat cells will remain sensitive to insulin and uptake fat no problem. You will still look fat visually, but you'll be healthy metabolically. However, and this explains how someone can be fat and healthy, this is how it is. However, this usually only accounts for 10% of obese people. This is the exception and not the rule. Most fat growth and growth in general occurs via hypertrophy. And as a little side note, this is just from my own background knowledge, it's the same for muscle growth as well. Most people who go to the gym, their muscles grow via hypertrophy. And we all know people who can literally look at weights and grow. These people have the genetic disposition to grow muscle cells via hyperplasia. And that's why some of these people can just lift weights and get way more muscular than other people. And am I jealous as shit? Yes, I am. You know what I mean? Because obviously I don't grow muscle that way.
So just kind of talking about what you just talked about, the hypertrophy and the hyperplasia. So if you're storing fat through hypertrophy, that's when you're going to get diabetic. But the hyperplasia, you can keep getting fatter and fatter and fatter, and you won't get diabetes. So like, think of those people that are like 400 pounds, or I'm honestly just thinking of probably like a lot of offensive linemen in the NFL. Like, that's probably what's going on with them.
Maybe, yeah. They're definitely genetic outliers.
I mean, because they're both fat, and they're both muscular, and they're probably pretty damn healthy.
Yeah, probably. But again, though, that's not the rule. That's the exception. Only 10% of fat people grow fat cells via that way. Most people are not that way. So you're probably not special, no offense. But growth through hypertrophy is more common, like I said, and leads to problems. So fat cells that are too packed full of fat show signs of dysfunction. So adiponectin goes down, which is anti-inflammatory. Inflammatory adipokines go up. Blood flow goes down. And this is all within the fat cell itself, which leads to hypoxia and infiltration of macrophages, which are white blood cells. And this is just pretty much recruitment of your immune system. So these fat cells are literally inflamed and dying. So when a fat cell becomes too full, it will resist the cue to take up more fat. And what's the cue to take up more fat? The hormone insulin. This is a hormone produced by your pancreas to help shuttle sugar into your cells. And not just sugar, it's pretty much all nutrients. Insulin's important for everything. But in this case, we're talking about sugar. So it's a common misconception that insulin is needed for sugar to get into your cells, but that's not true. And this is really the backbone for the whole insulin therapy. There was, it's almost like the dark ages, at least in the research I've read, for like the last 30 years, everyone has assumed that you needed insulin to get sugar into the cells, and that's not true at all. So glucose receptors are always present on the outside of our cells, and they work across various gradients. So think of if your blood sugar is in around the 70s, GLUT1 is activated, or at least works. If your blood sugar is in the 80s, GLUT2. If your blood sugar is in the 90s, GLUT3. So it works across a gradient like that. And there's six of them. So GLUT is just GLUT 1 through 6. So insulin, when our body produces it, just increases the amount of glucose receptors expressed on the outside of the cell. The primary one for muscle and fat is GLUT4. So insulin binds to the fat cells and increases the amount of glucose transporters receptors, like GLUT4, on its surface, allowing the cells to take up more sugar. Here's a quote. GLUT4 is a transport protein present in muscle and adipose tissue, which is known to be insulin sensitive. This means that in addition to the transporters resident in the cell membrane at any given moment, there is a pool of glucose transport molecules in the cytoplasm of the cell, which can be recruited in response to a rise in plasma insulin to join these already in-cell membrane in the fasting state. And that's, a lot of people just simply don't know that.
No, not at all.
That's like a little tidbit that I think a lot of people just, just not taught. It's not taught in the textbooks, but it's all, obviously it's all true.
And another thing that will increase GLUT4 is just exercise. Like how you said, you don't need insulin. Like, yeah, exercise is another way to increase that.
100%. Yep, exactly. Literally, you move your muscles back and forth enough, and GLUT4 will increase its expression on the outside of the cell, allowing your muscles to take up sugar, because guess what it needs at that point? Sugar. Exactly. Yeah. You know what I mean? It makes perfect sense. So these fully packed fat cells will express less insulin receptors on the cell surface, meaning our body will now have to produce more insulin to provoke the same response. So you need more insulin to do the same job, which is not good. So what's a good way to measure insulin, which is what diabetics really need to be worried about? They really don't need to be worried about their blood sugar level. The best way to measure insulin is a HOMA IR test. So this is pretty much fasting glucose times your fasting insulin divided by 405. And this is a measure of how much insulin it takes to keep your blood sugar in check. One or lower is great. Anything over 2.5 is really bad. And you definitely need to be checked out because you're metabolically unhealthy. So we talked about how LDL is a bad biomarker for damn near everything, especially for heart disease. Like if you have high LDL, but your HDL is high and your triglycerides are low, then LDL is not a marker for shit. Like you shouldn't worry about it at all. It's actually beneficial. And you can listen to, I think in the Keto Explained episode, we talked about LDL, right?
I know we talked about it on one of those, but pretty much if your triglyceride levels are low, then your insulin levels can't be that high. Like that's pretty much what's going on there. If your triglycerides are high, then that's an issue going on.
It's an issue. Yeah. So I wouldn't worry about LDL at all, but HOMA IR is a great marker for heart disease, for cancer, diabetes, everything. It's pretty much 1-to-1. When it goes up, your odds of having any of these conditions go up as well, including all cause mortality, which is what we talked about, really what people should be working about. That means from your just chances of dying from anything, you know?
Well, yeah, all the diseases that we just talked about related to insulin resistance, those are all like the top like 5 killers in our country right now. I think out of the top 10, I think outside of like accidents and smoking, all of them are tied some way to insulin resistance.
Yep, exactly. And HOMA IR is the best way to measure your insulin. So if HOMA IR measures insulin resistance, and the more insulin resistant you are, the more likely you are to have any of these life-threatening conditions, how do you become insulin resistant? Like I talked about earlier, it just increased fat storage leads to insulin resistance, and abdominal obesity is a telltale sign of insulin resistance.
All right, so before we go on, you've made fat look pretty bad. You've mentioned fat storage about 5 to 10 times.
Yes, I have.
Okay, so the reason that your body stores fat isn't because you're eating fat. It's two things going on there. One is you're increasing insulin. Insulin's a hormone that tells your body to store fat, and the way you trigger insulin is by eating a high carbohydrate diet. So if you're eating any sort of high carbohydrate diet, you're telling your body to store fat. That's what's going on there. And the other thing is that you're also really, really bad at burning your own body fat. And again, like if your insulin levels are high, your body's not going to be burning fat because it means you have glucose coming in, and you can only store a very limited amount of glucose. So since you can't store it, your body wants to burn it. And if your body's burning glucose, it's not burning fat. So don't get it twisted. Fat is not the enemy, especially dietary fat is not the enemy. It's the carbohydrates that are the enemy. That's the issue what's going on. It makes fat look bad. I hope they make that clear.
No, I think you did. Yeah. It's kind of like guilt by association type of thing. Yeah. Like it's not the fat's problem. It's the carbohydrates who definitely lead the charge in what causes us metabolically to not burn fat and then to accumulate it. So like I said, it's just too much fat accumulation. What happens when your fat cells become too full? And so fat literally starts to spill over in other places. First, it'll go to visceral fat, which is fat around your organs. And then finally, it'll go to ectopic fat, which means fat stored in your internal organs. And both of these scenarios are all bad.
Well, first it's subcutaneous fat. So once that's full, that's when it starts going visceral.
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, if you want to learn more about visceral fat and the problems with that, you can go back and listen to our stress podcast because we talked about how high cortisol leads to visceral fat and all the, honestly, metabolic disaster that causes. So you can go back and listen to that if you want.
And there's a pretty good way to tell if you are insulin resistant and you don't want to do this test. You can just walk towards a wall, and if the first thing that hits the wall is your belly, sorry, but you're insulin resistant.
That's a pretty simple measure, but yeah, it's true, man. It really is. So honestly, at this point, all your fat storage is full. So now you're shoving fat everywhere it doesn't want to go. So you'll store fat in your liver, in your muscles, and in your pancreas. And honestly, which internal organs are very important in sugar metabolism? Your muscles, your pancreas, and your liver. Like, those are the big three. So what do you think happens when these cells get packed full of fat that's not supposed to be there?
Do they start working optimally?
Yeah, right? They love it? No, they hate it, right? They become dysfunctional. And it's termed lipotoxicity. And that's a vicious cycle of diabetes. It's usually at this point that someone's blood sugar skyrockets and they finally get diagnosed with diabetes. But they were really diabetic the minute their subcutaneous fat cells became too full. And that's really why measuring blood sugar to kind of gauge diabetes is so stupid. And why you should really measure insulin.
So basically, like, by the time you realize you have a problem, it's spread all over the place.
Exactly.
Like, it was a problem probably a year or 2 years ago, but you were not able to diagnose it until it's spread everywhere.
Yes.
Until it's past your like own body fat, and then it goes to your organ fat. And if it gets at your organ fat, like, that's a pretty big deal.
It is a big deal. 100% it is, yeah. And that's why it's just dumb.
Can we just talk about how Tofi, because, like, if you think, like, oh, well, if I'm thin, then I should be fine.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, like, hey, I don't have that much subcutaneous fat, so how can I be diabetic?
Yeah, so I guess let's just touch on it. That really revolves around personal fat threshold. And because that explains how you can look skinny and even lean and muscular, yet still have sky-high insulin and suffer all the bad conditions that come along with obesity and insulin resistance. So we all know a person who's always skinny. And they eat whatever they want, right? Like, most people are just jealous of that person. But that person has a very low fat threshold. They simply can't store a lot of fat subcutaneously. And this is going to be determined by genetics. And I would argue it's not a good thing to not be able to store a lot of subcutaneous fat. There's nothing unhealthy about having a little bit of fat on you. It's a great buffer for our metabolism. And also a good visual cue that you need to change your diet and lifestyle.
Yeah, I always think of that as just kind of like a smoke detector going off. Like, if you start packing on the pounds, it's like, oh, something's going wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be much more concerned if I was one of those people that doesn't have that smoke detector going on. You know, like, how you wouldn't know that you're dysfunctional until it's pretty much too late, until your organs start having issues.
Yep.
And then by then, like, man, that's a pretty big deal. But if it's at the subcutaneous level and you're just start packing on the pounds, then it's okay. Hey, I can start improving. Mm-hmm. I can change this before it starts affecting my pancreas, before yes. it starts affecting all these other vital organs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, the people who are always lean usually don't see the need to change the way they're eating. Even though internally there's a good chance they are just as unhealthy as a morbidly obese person.
So I think, like, the best, like, visual example of this is bodybuilders. Because you see bodybuilders, they'll have a six-pack, but they'll still have a beer belly. Like, you can see their abs, but it's not flat. It kind of sticks out a little bit.
Yeah,
and
for
sure. That's because, like, they have very little subcutaneous fat, but they have a lot of visceral fat.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they look like a chimpanzee or like a gorilla, like, instead of a human. Like, normally, if you have a six-pack and you're a human, you got that V-shape.
Yeah.
But they got some weird, I don't even know how to explain it.
Yeah, they call it the bubble gut in the bodybuilding world. And that's really due to their diet and a lot of time due to the drugs they take, you know, but it's not healthy. You know, so they look visually appealing, you know, at least to some people, you know, they look muscular. But having all that visceral fat and fat around their organs, you know, the ectopic fat, is extremely unhealthy. And there's a condition where people are very muscular and they're not bodybuilders just naturally. They just don't have the ability to store much fat subcutaneously. They are very insulin resistant, and it's called lipid dystrophy. And these people pretty much can't store subcutaneous fat. They're just, like, ripped all the time. They look like bodybuilders, but they suffer the same fates as the obese. So they show all the signs of metabolic syndrome besides the visual cue of carrying extra body fat. Which, again, is like living in a house without a smoke detector.
Yeah, honestly, like, I know several people that are like this, and they're the ones that concern me the most, because most people want to make a dietary change because they started putting on some fat.
Yep.
And that's, like, their signal, like, oh, hey, you know, like, I want to look better. Like, that's most people's signal, like, hey, I want to do a dietary change because I want to look better. Unfortunately, most people aren't really connecting that to health. But, like, these people that are already skinny, like, when are they going to think about this?
Yeah, they don't care.
When it's probably too late.
Yep,
when exactly. So much damage has already been done.
Yeah, like, pretty much these lean people, they eat like crap. I mean, I'm not saying they all of them do, but, you know, some of them do. And trust me, they still put on fat like the rest of us, but they just don't store it subcutaneously or people can see it. They store it in their muscles and in their internal organs, which is the final step in diabetes. Once your subcutaneous fat stores are full and your visceral fat stores are full, they shove it into your organs and now your blood sugar's through the roof. And so just because you're skinny doesn't mean you're healthy. That's pretty much the bottom line.
So yeah, the whole personal fat threshold, everybody has a different level. Like, yeah. That's pretty much what we're getting at. Some people can get up to 300 pounds, and then that's when their personal fat threshold kicks in. Some people, hey, their personal fat threshold is only 150 pounds, and they're not ever going to crack
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they'll never crack it. Yeah, exactly. So how does this relate to keto? Like, I just talked this whole time about it, you know? So how do we max out our fat cells? It's by eating a shit ton of carbohydrates and fat together, like Tom said earlier. Think of, like, a hamburger and fries, or cereal, milk, donuts, candies. All these foods are high in fat and carbohydrates. So there's an order for how our body deals with fuel. It always burns the most problematic fuel first, and in this case, that's sugar. This explains why certain individuals can eat a lot of carbs and not be diabetic. If they're eating low-fat diet, it won't be a problem. The real problem occurs when you pair carbs and fat with every meal for years. Your body won't burn both fuel sources at once. If you eat carbs and fat together, your body will always store fat and burn the carbs. That's just how it works. Like you said earlier, we just don't have a lot of space for carbohydrates in our body.
You got your liver and you got your muscles and that's basically, and you got your blood. That's basically it.
That's right. And trust me, not a lot of people have a lot of muscle on them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just a fact, right?
I mean, that is one of the best benefits of having a lot of muscle on you, is you do have a little bit more room to, like, just store all these extra carbohydrates, all this extra glucose.
Yeah, I always say, like, muscle acts like a glucose buffer. It's never a bad thing to have a little muscle on your frame. It's always healthy. So that's just how it works. And your body burns sugar over fat every time. It doesn't have a choice. So this occurs because when you eat carbs, the hormone insulin gets elevated and shuttles all the dietary fat into fat cells. So if your meal is just chicken breast and white rice, you'll be fine. I mean, you might die of boredom, you know what I mean? Trust me, I lived that life for a long time from, like, lack of flavor, but you won't be diabetic. But if you eat fried chicken and mashed potatoes every meal, now you've created a problem. You know, because you're giving your body the carbs and the fat at the same meal. The body burns the carbs, stores the fat every single time. And the narrative now is to eat six small meals a day, so you just never give your body a chance to burn that body fat.
So before we move on, you said, like, if you eat chicken breast and white rice, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
That's true when it comes to diabetes, but that is far from an optimal diet.
Yeah.
Because, all right, you have essential fatty acids. You're not getting your essential fatty acids from that chicken breast, from that low-fat diet. Also, most vitamins are fat-soluble. Means that they're not only stored with fat, like in animal fat, but that also means you need fat to absorb those vitamins. So, fine is kind of like, I mean, it's definitely not optimal.
Fine. No, it's not optimal.
Yeah, fine just means you won't be diabetic, but it's not optimal.
Yeah, exactly.
So there are essential fats, and there's a lot of benefits to consuming fats, but there's no such thing as an essential carbohydrate. And if you have to choose between fats and carbs, like, it's not much of a choice. Fats are the superior choice, and it's not even close.
Not even close, yeah, exactly. So that's one of the benefits of keto. So a keto allows you to become a better fat burner. And diabetics have a hard time burning fat. And it's been shown over the years of eating too much glucose, their bodies don't burn fat efficiently. So it just gets stored all the time.
If you don't use it, you lose it.
Exactly. So if you don't use those mitochondria, you don't use that machinery to burn fat, you just simply don't do it very well. But you can reverse this whole thing by going low carb. Your insulin gets lowered and you get better at burning the excess stored fat you have on your body. You need to get the fat out of your muscles and liver and pancreas to reverse the diabetes. And you do that by restricting carbohydrates and eating more fat and protein. And that's really the most fattening thing about carbohydrates, is that they displace beta oxidation. They displace the burning of fat for fuel. And it is true, I want to touch on this, that carbs can be turned into fat. You know, people, I don't know, I think it's like a buzzword. Like, I've heard people talk about this around me that, you know, oh, all these carbs we are just going to turn to fat. And that can happen, but that's a small piece of the puzzle, you know?
I mean, and that's only true just because, like, we've hijacked, like, our food system so much. Like, yeah, if you're drinking, like, a 12-pack of Coca-Cola a day, like, yeah, that's so many carbs. Some of that is going to get converted into fat, but that's not natural.
It's not natural at all. But because the majority of fat we store is from the fat we eat. It's a fat that we pair with those carbohydrates. That's really the fat on our body. And, like, you have to eat carbs in excess. Like, I'm talking 300 grams plus a day every day. And, of course, that number is kind of arbitrary because it's going to change by person and by case. But you have to eat a shit ton of carbs for those actually to be turned into fat. So that's really not the problem there. And this is one of the reasons, I guess, I don't know, plant-based doctors, vegan doctors out there, honestly, kooks who don't know shit, will blame fat for lipid dystrophy or fat for diabetes because they say, you know, it's fat in the cell. And they'll even blame saturated fat, usually in general. And that's because when someone does eat carbohydrates in excess, right? Say someone's BMR is 2000, what BMR just stands for basal metabolic rate. And that's the amount of calories your body's going to burn literally just sitting still all day. So it's 2,000 for them. They eat a couple hundred grams of fat, a couple hundred grams of protein, and 500 grams of carbs. At that point, they are way over their BMR as far as calorie standpoint. And a lot of those carbohydrates will be converted into fat. And the only fat that our body makes, especially from our liver, is saturated fat. It'll make something called palmitic acid, which is a 16-carbon long saturated fat. And it can extend it to 18-carbon stearic acid or unhydrogenate or dehydrogenate one of the bonds to make oleic acid, which is just the main acid in olive oil. But that's one of the reasons why people find saturated fat in these cells of really obese people that causes problems. Again, it's not from the saturated fat they ate. It's from the saturated fat our body makes from the excess carbohydrates. Did I explain that right? You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it's not... And again, like, it's not that our body's making saturated fat and that's the problem. The reason that it's doing that is because there's too much carbohydrates and insulin levels too high. So it's making this fat because, again, we're not burning fat properly. And also, we just have so much carbs that we need something to do with it. Our glycogen levels are full, so we can't store it anymore. It's that. The other option is super high blood glucose, which is very dangerous. So your body doesn't want that. So it's got to do something with it.
Exactly. So we make fat.
And it chooses whatever the lesser of the evils is.
Which is making fat. Exactly. So definitely, it's not saturated fat is not the problem. But that's kind of why and how. There's a bunch of papers out there that'll blame saturated fat. That's one of the mechanisms for why that does happen. And that's an angle people never touch on. You know what I'm saying? That this fat comes from the carbs.
Yeah, it's not the saturated fat from your diet. So don't worry about that.
Yeah, exactly. So... Yeah, I want to touch on why giving diabetics insulin is so stupid. Because the current dogma treats diabetes like it's a disease of too little insulin, which is completely wrong. Like we talked about earlier, it's a disease of too much insulin. So here's a quote, and this is from a study just titled Insulin, Understanding Its Action in Health and Disease. So quote, the consequence of this error was the concept of insulin being required for glucose entry into cells rather than just accelerating glucose uptake. The hyperglycemia of diabetes was interpreted as a damming back of glucose in the bloodstream as a consequence of a lack of insulin. This became established teaching, and although the concept was shown to be erroneous in the mid-1970s, the teaching has not changed. Consequently, therapy has been based on a flawed concept. Current dogma would have us believe that administration of insulin to somebody with severely deranged diabetes suddenly and miraculously allows the cells in the body to breathe again and to be restored to their former healthy state. This is, as we have seen, untrue. So it is amazing how long this dogma has persisted. Which is crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, this shit's been wrong for so long and we've known it. Diabetes is really a disease of too much glucagon, which is just diabetes as glucagon run amok. So giving diabetics insulin will prevent them from ever tapping into their fat stores and reversing their diabetes. Too much insulin is what caused them to become diabetic. So why are we giving them more and more? This is treating the symptom and not the root cause. And it's about managing symptoms, not curing them. That's what our healthcare system is based on, and that shit should be illegal. Like, we should be trying to cure these people, not just take more money from them. So giving them insulin every day will keep their pancreas and liver full of fat and ensure that they never reverse their diabetes. Once you get the extra fat out of those cells, you won't have to take insulin anymore, and you will become insulin sensitive again. It's 100% possible to reverse diabetes. You just can't listen to what the fuck the doctors tell you.
Yeah. And it's sad, and they're just trying the diet that they push is just going to press the diabetes further along, and then the insulin is just going to make it worse and worse. Like, it's just a vicious cycle.
It's a vicious cycle. It really is. So if you are suffering from diabetes out there, what you want to do is go low carb. That's going to allow your body to better burn fat for fuel, and it's going to get that fat out of the pancreas. It's going to get that fat out of your liver and your muscles, and you will become insulin sensitive again, and you won't need to take your medication. You can be, I guess I'm making a bunch of broad statements, but hopefully you won't have to take your medications anymore, and you can be healthy again. It's possible out there. Don't think that you're stuck with this for the rest of your life, because you're not.
Yeah, and just to kind of like make an analogy of this. So when your cells start becoming insulin resistant, think of it as those cells are becoming deaf. So it's no longer listening to insulin. So the doctor is just prescribing more and more insulin. So it's basically yelling at you. So what a ketogenic diet is going to do, hey, your cells are deaf. They can't hear you. So you can yell and scream all you want. It's not going to do any good. What a ketogenic diet is doing is it's teaching your cells sign language. So now there's another way that it can learn. And that sign language you can just think of as fat oxidation. So bam, you get rid of the insulin, you get rid of all that noise that's unnecessary. Now can you learn sign language, and then it can operate optimally like it's supposed to.
Exactly. No, exactly. So true. So keto is really, it's the answer for everything damn near. I'm telling you. I mean, a lot of people out there are perfectly fine with, a well-balanced diet. Let's say, eating carbs and fats together. But just be honest with yourself and look around, man. The current system is not working. People are fat, people are sick, people are sad, and this is what it is, man. If you go low carb, you can reverse a lot of these things, and that's why I think, that's a beautiful thing about keto, that's a strong thing about keto, is that it allows you to heal yourself, and that's what makes it therapeutic. And we're going to touch on keto for heart disease in the future, keto for diabetes, what we just did, keto for cancer in the future, and how the ketogenic diet and just a fat animal-based diet helps with all these conditions, because it definitely does.
Yeah, and the time to start acting on this isn't when you're like really feeling sluggish and you just feel you have no energy, you've put on like 5 pant sizes. You don't want to wait that long. Once you start realizing like, hey, I put on like 1 or 2 pant sizes, hey, that's a warning sign. Like, hey, this is coming. Like, you can wait until you went from a size 30 to a size 40. But in reality, once you get from a size 30 to like a 36, like, oh, hey, you should do something about it. I know a lot of people just think, oh, that's a sign of aging. But it's not a sign of aging, it's a sign of disease. And you should address that as soon as you possibly can.
Yep. No, I love you said that. All right. Anything else you wanted to say?
No, I think that's about it for diabetes.
Yeah. No, I wanted to, like I said, diabetes is a glucagon run amok. I wanted to touch on that angle of it. And maybe I will another time. But since this was really about the ketogenic diet, I didn't go into that. But maybe next time. There's always more we can talk about. But did you have a tip of the week this week?
Yeah, so if you guys have been following us on Facebook, I've been trying to do like a little series each week on just kind of teaching you something new. So this week I've been talking about building muscle. So I'm just going to kind of summarize what I've been posting on Facebook. So like if you're really trying to build muscle, you need 4 things. So those 4 things are you need a stimulus. Everybody knows what that is. You go to the gym, you lift heavy weights. You don't get bigger from going to the gym, but you do tell your body that it needs to get bigger. So lift heavy weights, do some blood flow restrictive training, do some negatives, making lightweight feel heavy.
Sure.
Something along those lines. Those are signals. That's what getting into the gym is. Next thing you need is you need those building materials. That's protein. So, hey, unlike what the Game Changers movie says, not all protein is created equal. Animal protein is by far the best. Not only do you absorb it so much better than any plant source, but it also comes with all the materials that you need. All the amino acids are there. So there is no limiting factor. So animal protein is the best building blocks. And you want to be getting at least 1 gram per pound of body weight. At least. The more, the better. And then on top of that, you need time for these changes to occur. That's sleep. So hey, if you really want to make a lot of changes, you really want to grow, get as much sleep as you possibly can. 8 hours is like a minimum. Top level athletes are getting 10 plus hours a night. So if you really want to get maximum muscle growth, you should be trying to get as much sleep as you possibly can. And the fourth and final step is consistency. doing this stuff once a week is not enough. You need to do this stuff day after day after day. Obviously, you don't want to be breaking down the same muscles every single day, but you want to be giving your body signals on a regular basis. So, and you always want to be eating as much as you can. You always want to be sleeping as much as you can. This isn't like a half-ass thing. If you're really trying to do this, you need to be consistent with it. And unfortunately, it takes a long time. You just got to just stay with it.
Yeah. Oh, God, bro. You're preaching to the choir, man. I know. Yeah, it's funny how a lot of people, at least I know, common for women and males too, you know, soft-ass dudes are like, oh, I don't want to lift weights because I'm scared to get too big. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, bro, you don't even get it. That's like saying I'm scared to drive a car because I don't want to drive a NASCAR. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's, bro, it's not going to happen. To be too big, you have to bust your ass for years.
That's such an insult to
someone like me. Yeah. Yes, it is. I'm like, bro, I try so hard every day to be big. And look at me. I'm like barely above average. You know what I mean? So
I know that's honestly, I mostly hear that from girls. Like, women are always saying that. Like, no, I don't want to lift weights because I'm like, I'll be putting on.
It's not happening.
Honestly, I spent a good 10 years trying to look like Arnold. I didn't come close. Like, it doesn't happen that easy.
It really doesn't. Yeah, you got to bust your ass for a long time. But all right, yeah, so that was keto and diabetes. Hope you guys liked it. Hope you learned something. If you have any questions, you can always reach out. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please share this with the podcast. Everybody knows somebody with diabetes. Please share it with them. This will definitely have some sort of impact on their life in a great way. Feel free to rate and subscribe on whatever your favorite podcast provider. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. And we also have a donate button on our homepage. It's a bright yellow button. If you want to donate some money, we greatly appreciate it. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.